Good evening, planet Earth. This is the planetary status report with your good friend Dan. And if you're listening to me, it is 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you're probably listening to WRMI out of Miami on 5950 kilohertz, that's 5950 kilohertz. And that is 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So I say good evening, though technically I am recording this on Friday morning, April the 2nd. Yeah, April the 2nd, 2021. And it's around 2 a.m. But I can pretend it's 11 p.m. on Sunday because I have a time helmet. You can have a time helmet too if you subscribe to me. I'm kidding. I don't know how to make a time helmet. I wouldn't even suggest making a time helmet because I think time travel is probably just basically really flawed. And so you're just better off not working with time helmets. You're better off just avoiding time helmets altogether. I mean, in general, people think time helmets are great until you run into your first time super paradox. The triple whammy, the what if your grandma's uncle became your brother's wife? What if your brother's uncle's grandpa accidentally died in a skiing accident and then became your cousin's nephew's, I don't know, masseur? Yes, if you mess with time... No, I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole because, okay, so I've been watching these stupid shows on Netflix, and I got to just say that because I know Netflix is kind of evil. But we'll just get that out of the way. But there's this one out of Germany, like Germany Netflix, called Dark, and it's about time travel. And in a way, it's about the multiverse too. And if you don't know, I don't really believe in the multiverse. I think that... Schrodinger uncertainty has more than one interpretation. I think the multiverse is one. I think there's also this notion of what it means for something to actually be in the past versus the present. I think one of the things we get from Schrodinger is this way of looking at the present as a kind of definition of uncertainty. You could literally say that another definition for the present is uncertainty. But once it's in the past, it's done, it's finished. And I don't think you can go back and change things. But Dark is about time travel and time caves. And you go into the time cave and you probably go down the witch's rabbit hole of time exploration. And maybe you contact the mystic wolves and they take you down to the Nazi dungeon. And there you contact the elf of awareness. And this is the show Dark. Anywho, if you want to review the notes for this show, the notes are at dfgtc.org/show notes. I repeat, dfgtc.org/show notes. And if you are deeply offended by time travel, jokes about time travel, time helmets, time burgers, time hot dogs, time tacos, time shares, if any of these things are triggering you to be angry or upset with me so that you would want to use a word that I can't use on radio because this is also radio now and not just an MP3, well, if you need to do that, you can contact me at me@iamsully.com. I know that may sound confusing, but the part before the at sign is just me, letter M, letter E, @iamsully.com. And all this is in the show notes. So once again, dfgtc.org/show notes. All the info you need to go the next level, plus my good friend Jim has some essays on there. You can click on those. Have a good read. Plus some of his fiction. He's got fiction on there, so there's fictional reading. Good stuff about what's going on. So. So I thought after a few of my rants that I should probably do something, if only for good mojo, but it's hard because I don't have a lot right now, to spare. Like if I figure I have any good mojo, I want to save it for this. I almost think I want to say a brave person, because if this is a good person, it's a brave thing to help a stranger these days. You never know who the stranger is. The stranger can be a monster. The stranger can be a dangerous person. In the Bible, we're told to look out for the stranger, but that's not that easy to do. And in a city like Seattle, it's like you're just sort of driven apart. I kind of said something in a previous broadcast about Kurt Cobain and how maybe that marked the point that Seattle stopped being cool, but maybe that's not reality either, because when I was a freshman at the University of Washington, I remember how cold it was, and not temperature-wise, but how people were towards each other. And it almost seemed like people were under some type of spell. I would compare and contrast that to going to graduate school in Ellensburg at Central, where it was a public school, but it was a smaller school. And people didn't seem so cold, so distant. And I'm drinking a little water here because it's early in the morning, and I'm in a weird state of mind, so please bear with me. But I feel like if you're going to do this right, if you're going to make this transition, you should remember the things you actually, have fond memories about. And I'm going to go down a simple list. It is not a complete list. It is not the complete criterion list. If you had a good list, it probably would be better than my list. But this list is just based upon a few experiences, a few things here, a few things there, things that I will miss. And also, FYI, there are items on my list that I think are already gone. Like, I don't think they exist any longer. The places where they used to be are gone. So they could still exist because they moved, or they could simply be gone. And so some of these things I'm saying goodbye to are really already gone. The first place is Dick's Cheeseburgers. I kind of like Dick's Cheeseburgers. I know that it doesn't sound right. If you're not from Seattle, if you hear somebody say that, it's like, holy smokes, dude, Dan. This is radio, and I know it's radio, but yes, there's a old school cheeseburger chain in Seattle called Dick's, and it is fantastic. Even to this day, I think it's still pretty good, and it's hard to keep things high quality at this point in a lot of ways because things are just so stressful for people. But it's a great place. I'm gonna miss it. There are a lot of chains that are kind of like it, but it's not really that many though. And it really is a place that figured it out. Like, if you keep your menu simple, you can deliver high quality food, and you can still do it in a way where it appears as if they can pay their employees reasonably well. So it's possible to run an ethical business. I think Dick's is a good example of that. I'd like to say. I could be wrong. They could be chopping up homeless people, putting it into the Dick's Deluxe with extra grape sauce. I don't think so. I will miss Dick's Cheeseburgers. I will miss Dick's Cheeseburgers. The next one is also Burgers, Red Mill Burgers. You would go in there and they would have stacks of bacon, like bacon on bacon on bacon, and then you know that you're not in heaven, but you're probably in one of the gateways to heaven, so you might go through that spot. Yeah, Red Mill Burgers. And I never really knew if they were strictly local. Like, I think they are local, but I never really figured that out. I think that there may be one or two locations. There was one location, I think, on Finney Ridge. But there might be more than one. And I just love that place. Fantastic cheeseburgers. Surreal, sublime, tasty. And I think, that food can be healthy if it's prepared in a decent way, and they always did. And they had great French fries, and they had a great attitude. And I think they had onion rings too that were pretty good. And I hope they still exist. I think I saw that they were open a week ago. So I will miss Red Mill. I will miss Red Mill burgers. Snappy Dragon is a Chinese restaurant in Maple Leaf, Seattle. Snappy Dragon is one of the best Chinese restaurants I've ever been to in my whole life. If you are ever in Seattle and it still exists, you should go there. It's that good. I rarely recommend places like that, but I don't know if there's indoor seating. I think we're still in a dystopia. But let's say the dystopia ended and Snappy Dragon could be an actual restaurant in a functional reality, then I would recommend Snappy Dragon. And in the very least, I would recommend delivery from Snappy Dragon. It's not really as good because it's not as fresh. And it's not just about the food. There's something different about people being there that want to be there to serve food. It's an atmosphere. It's hard to explain. It is frightening that it is being tossed down the wood chipper of history right now. That kind of experience, it is frightening. The next one's called the Rhine House, and it's across the street basically from Seattle University. It's actually just up the street from where I live. And it's kind of a, I guess you could call it kind of a German, sort of German restaurant type of thing. It's got that German pub thing going. It's got a pretty good menu. And I would also say, along with these other places, as healthy as you can make that kind of food, pretty healthy. So, the Rhine House, I will miss it. And they had really good pretzels. And I know a lot of people are opposed to carbohydrates, and so pretzels are really bad. But also, I mean, come on, beer is bad too. And they're both bad. But the pretzels at the Rhine House, I really like them. They're bad for you, but I like them. The next place is called Kid Valley. And I gotta say, if I'm gonna tell you I miss Kid Valley, I really miss it from 3 decades ago. Like, Kid Valley used to be this really, really good, I guess you would call it fast food, right? But this pretty good local kind of fast food chain. And the food was great. They had this really good patty melt thing they would do that was like a French dip. It was all really good food, well prepared, and people were happy to be there. And then about 30 years ago, and maybe it really is related to the death of Kurt Cobain, but right around the death of Kurt Cobain, all of that started going sideways. Isn't that interesting, brothers and sisters? So Kid Valley, I will miss them, but in reality, I miss Kid Valley from 1994, so that's the weirdness in my head. The next one I'm gonna miss, I don't think I necessarily have to because it's kind of a chain, and it's called Taco Time. It's not Taco Bell, it's Taco Time. Taco Time, I guess, is a big enough chain now that probably, maybe, where I'm going, there might be one nearby. I kind of like Taco Time. If you're going to get fast food, it's not the worst, but also probably not that good for you. I mean, I know there are people listening on shortwave who are really healthy, and they're thinking to themselves, Dan, you're destroying the world, and I'm not trying to do that. Next topic. I mean, next place I'll miss. So there's this, I'm sorry, I made a little noise there. There's this Thai food restaurant in Queen Anne in Seattle that's been around for a long time. I first started going to it back in the 1980s. And I don't know if they still exist. It would be a blessing from God if a place like that still existed because they were really good. I hope they're still there. They're really good at what they do. A really good atmosphere, really nice people. They were happy to serve you healthy Thai food and really, really great Thai food. Tup Tim Thai is the name of the restaurant. And if it still exists and you were ever able to order from it, because in the dystopia, I don't know if you're going to go there and sit down. You might have to just order from it, but if you can, Tim Thai is pretty fantastic. Amazing food. I have memories going back. I didn't have a ton of money in college, but in reality, the money went further back then too. But if I had enough money, I would go there for dinner, and sometimes with my brother, when I was in school and he was in school, and those were good memories. Having enough money to go to Tup Tim Thai and then maybe go see a movie. Maybe go see, I don't know, what movie would we have seen? Maybe the, yeah. Maybe the one, the Evil Dead one, the Army of the Dead, whatever. Army of Darkness. I think that movie might have been playing during one of those periods in my life, and yeah, I might have gone and seen it with my brother after we went and got Tup Tim Thai. I'm gonna miss that place. Hale's Brew Pub. I don't know if they're still around, but if they are, it's a pretty good place. But then what's the point of a brew pub if you have to order from it? I don't want to talk about it. Next on my list is a place that I hope is surviving, but I don't know how. It's called the Mountain Inn Restaurant in Greenwood, Ballard. I think it's called the Mountain Inn or the Little Mountain Inn. It's on 85th Street, kind of, I don't know where you'd call it, around 10th Avenue or something like that. But maybe further up than that, maybe 14th, I don't really know. But anyways, it's in that Greenwood Ballard zone, and I believe on 85th Street. And it's just in a house, like an ordinary house. You would almost miss it if you weren't looking for it or didn't know you want to go there. But their menu has always been fantastic. I never ever had a meal at this particular little Mountain Inn restaurant. I never had a meal that wasn't good. They have a little bar in there, so you'll walk into it. It's like a house, but they'll have a little bar off to the right, and then a kind of seating area off to the left. And yeah, the wait staff is decent, honest people, hardworking. Whoever the cook is fantastic. I should say, I want to say chef. I remember having these barbecued ribs that they would make, and they were probably better than stuff I would get when I lived in Tennessee. And I know there are people in Nashville who are listening to the shortwave broadcast and saying, "Dan, how dare you? How dare you say that you could find barbecued ribs that are more succulent and tasty than something you'd find in Nashville Boblimpdoc?" Well, they were really good. The Little Mountain Inn, I think, is the name of the place. And it's in that Greenwood Ballard zone in Seattle, so check it out. But I don't know if they still exist. I don't know. The next place on my list, I think, is gone, but I'm going to talk about it. Nate's Wings and Waffles. It used to be open up the street before the Dystopia. It's hard to find really good chicken strips, but I would have to say that Nate's Wings and Waffles pretty much had the best. Well, this is a tough one because there was a place in Nashville that was really good too. But there's only like a few places I can think of where the chicken strips is like, I think about them, and if I have the money, I have to buy them. They're that good. Nate's Wings and Waffles. And if you lived, in the Capitol Hill area or the Central District, or you went to Seattle University, this is a place you might have gone to. And I don't know if they still exist someplace else. I just know the place up the street is shut down. The next place is also in the same category as Nate's. It's called the Heidelberg House. It used to be in kind of that 65th Street, Ravenna kind of area. I think 60th, whatever. And it was kind of a German restaurant. I think it was called the Old Heidelberg House or something like that, Heidelberg House. But it had the best German food ever. I used to have their Rundlade. I think that's how you say it. It was always fantastic. It was one of those places where if someone said, "Do you want to go someplace in Seattle and have dinner, and it's going to be a great meal, and it's probably not going to cost you an arm and a leg?" This place, the Heidelberg House, was one of those places. And I don't know if they still exist. I don't know if they're still in business. A lot of places are not surviving the singularity, and I mean this in the physics sense and not in the Kurzweil sense, the surviving the event horizon of this gigantic black hole, and it's not great. And there's a lot of pain. And I don't want people in Seattle to think that I don't really hate the people of Seattle. I just hate what this dystopia has done to Seattle. And I also recognize that it just didn't magically happen. All of this came from some place. It wasn't just an accident. So, next up, Pagliacci's Pizza. If there were a way that Pagliacci's database tracked this, and I don't think they can, but they might have, but if Pagliacci Pizza could track this, I probably consumed almost all the pizza ever. No, I'm kidding. I think I would be a customer. They say, "Holy smokes, he represents 1% of our blah, blah, blah." And it's like, "Well, we should take him out. Take him out. He's 1%. 1% of total revenue over some period of time." I'm kidding. But yeah, I love Pagliacci pizza. Now, if you're keto, if you're that, I think they may have keto crust now. I don't know. But if you're keto, you want to just turn away from the shortwave or turn away from the podcast because this is really scary, okay? But Pagliacci Pizza is pretty good. And their delivery service was always pleasant, even during the dystopia. I can attest to that. I decided to have a farewell pizza a little while back, and I can attest to the fact that they are still decent, courteous people trying to survive, trying to get through this. And I don't know how anybody's doing it. I know that I basically grapple every day. I have the fear this morning that I'll collapse while trying to just move a few boxes. How pathetic is that? So, next one. The next one's called The Worst Place, WURST, and it's kind of on Westlake Avenue down in Seattle, I think. And I don't know if they still exist. I think they probably do, but I don't know. Basically, they're kind of like a bratwurst place, but they're just fantastic. And, I used to go there when I worked down there. I'd go there for lunch. Their menu was great. Their wait staff was very speedy. It was a very efficient process. If you're ever down by Westlake and The Worst Place still exists, then, I'd recommend checking them out because they're pretty good. And listen, I got one more item on my list. But the list is not complete, folks. If you're asking yourself, does Dan only have a few items of things he cares about? No. I have brothers and sisters and family here that I will miss. I absolutely will miss. I also will miss the fact that there was a world where somebody like me could exist without being harassed, without being chased around, without being called some kind of monster, when in reality, all I ever wanted to do was live a small life, much smaller than most people can imagine. And I can't even do that really, because this world is closing in on me, and it's closing in on a lot of people. That doesn't mean it's the end of the world. But there are people whose worlds are ending. And this is something we kind of have to think about a little bit, especially if you happen to be lucky, and for whatever reason, in the great entropy pump of the sideways wobble of human civilization, your particular rice bowl is full right now. God bless. God bless if you're doing okay. God bless if you have money. God bless if you have resources and food and shelter and clean water. God bless if you have family around that love you. These are blessings and they are from God. But there are people in pain out there. And there are people out there whose lives are kind of just a wreck. And the fact is, my life was a bit of a wreck before 2020 ever happened. You know, in a weird way, some things really didn't change that much, except for the fact that it's at a certain point, it became difficult for me to be able to go for a walk. I couldn't go outside without being horrified. And a lot of people will listen to this and say, well, Dan, it's just a mask, but it's not. It's kind of an insult to people's intelligence. It's a general proof that people are that obedient. I mean, that's kind of what the mask does. It proves a certain level of obedience. It blocks essential communication. And I'm sorry, I know they talk about those VR masks where you can like simulate smiles. Guys, we need real human smiles. We need real hugs, okay, if they're welcome. We need real handshakes if they're welcome. We need real touching if it's mutual. But we need humans to be allowed to be human beings. This is a dystopia for any other reason, but that is one of the main reasons, because it's not simply that it's irrational. It is existentially harmful. It is acidic to the very things that connect us. And it is acidic in the sense that it might seem only slow at first, but it's going to be insidious. And the generations that would be exposed to this, if we allow this, will be psychologically damaged. Next topic. You know, one of the things that we it's important to sort of ask ourselves, and this is going to sound really stupid, but what we should probably do every once in a while, like starting probably today and probably every day of our life, is we should probably ask ourselves what is important. Because I will admit, I am guilty of stressing out over things. When I look back at the things I used to stress out over, that I used to obsess over, that I used to spend my sweat and tears and anger and rage over, when I look back on those things, it seems funny to me. Because they were a lot of things that weren't really that important. They weren't. And yet they became obsessions, and they became reasons for even, to some extent, even a relationship to be damaged because they were powerful obsessions. And they weren't that important. There are things in this life that are important, and there are things that are not. And it is a very difficult sort of ocean to navigate because I cannot claim I figured it out. I have not. I still do things that are probably not that important, and there are things that probably do put me and my situation vis-a-vis others into a more difficult situation. Okay, I don't know how else to put it. I mean, people can talk about marijuana all they want to, but the reality is, we still basically live in a country where, by federal law, it's illegal for us to use it, to take it anywhere, to whatever. And so I have relationships that are impacted by the marijuana issue, not because I want them to be, but because we live in that country. And given where we're headed, given our direction at this point, I don't see that getting better. So every day I need to ask myself what is important. As a Christian, probably the best answer, especially on Good Friday. And it's worth noting that even though you're going to hear this on Easter Sunday, this is being recorded on Good Friday. It's important as Christians to remember what is important, what's a priority. to serve Christ, really, the way that Christ ultimately served us, to save us. And I don't know that I do that very well. I attempted to start a church this last year, an online church, and I haven't given up on it, brothers and sisters, even though I haven't really been able to do that many services. And I don't know if I did a good job so far, and I don't know that I will do a good job, and I know I've been told by some people that you shouldn't think of it that way, but I'm a human being. And it's hard not to think of things in terms of succeed or failure, especially if you've been through the public schools. You know, you're a winner or you're a loser. You're an A or you're a B. You're basically varsity or you're junior varsity. But the fact is, there are things that are important in this life. If you're a parent, your kids are obviously important. As they should be. They should probably be the most important thing in your life. That's a good priority. If there's something else that takes precedence over your kids, that should be a question mark. Like, if this dystopia takes precedence over your care of your children, you really do need to ask questions about it. I'm sorry. And yes, whatever else anyone will say, a vaccine is a medical procedure, and you have a right to ask about medical procedures, okay? You do. I don't know why people now think it's wrong to ask questions, but it does seem like we've entered a period of human history where asking questions will become illegal because you're simply just supposed to obey. It is very much, in a lot of ways, like one of the worst case scenarios I imagined when I was younger. And I'm sorry if you heard that burp just now. I'm kind of nervous because, like I said, I'm moving today. It's freaking me out. But technically, if you're listening to me, I'm already in Utah. One hopes, right? God willing. But it isn't Sunday. It's Good Friday. And I am making a journey today on Good Friday. And I don't know if that's a good thing to do or a bad thing to do. I don't think Jesus minds, but I don't really have the answers. I can only tell you that I'm trying to figure out for myself what is important. It may seem like a dumb question, but I'm trying to. I was going to talk about the Suez Canal thing. I don't know if I'm going to because the whole thing is horrid and it's silly. I have a quote from Dr. Freckles. If you're not making guns, you're not making freedom. That's right. If you're not making guns, you're not making freedom. That probably is a scary statement to people in Seattle. I will say, though, if what you desire is a black market, that's exactly what you're going to get. And that's what a prohibition produces. So if the goal is to have no guns, what you're going to end up with is more guns and probably, I don't know how else to put it, way more dangerous guns. Because a black market's going to deliver to people's desires. That's what black markets do. If you don't believe me, research the history of black markets, research the war on drugs. These things don't work. And I would argue, and I know there's some people who think I'm a fool, but I would argue that putting together a basic gun business is easier than putting together a basic drug business as far as production, because really you can still go to the hardware store. You can still order high tolerance steel pipe. You can still do things like that. And because you can, and because you can still buy chemicals and you can still do other things, there's no real way to stop people from making guns in their basement. So the net effect of a gun ban is ultimately to expand the black market for guns. And that's the thing. It's like that or the vaccination record thing. What they'll say is, it's not that we're going to send you to a camp, Dan. It's just that you won't be able to eat or sleep or do anything without the vaccination card. But how is that really, it's not different. But the reality is a lot of people will forge the cards. They will do fraudulent things. Listen, I've worked in healthcare. healthcare was crooked before the COVID. In fact, you could contend that one of the ways the COVID psyop works is because healthcare is that crooked. Healthcare is really crooked. Ultimately, if you pay the right person a certain amount of money, they will update a database, they will go into their system, and right next to your social security number will be, yep, he got the vaccine, he got batch 13, the one that gives you monkey herpes. So I think if you want to, you know, I think it's kind of silly. It's a weird quote from Dr. Freckles. And once again, it's in the notes. The notes are at dfgtc.org/show notes. But it's a weird quote. If you're not making guns, you're not making freedom. But it isn't. I do have a point. And the point is that at this point in history, with respect to the authorities that are above us, we have to start making rational choices or we're probably going to, you know, be killed. It looks like that's where we're at. I don't know what else to say. I think there's a lot of terrible stuff happening in the name of the law, but all of it seems quite lawless. And there's a tremendous amount of tyranny occurring in the cities and the states. And so, yeah, I don't know what to tell you. If you want to have your dignity, if you want to maintain your freedom as a human being, you have to do what you have to do to defend yourself. That is your right as a living being in the world. It's really that simple. It doesn't matter who you are. It's not about race or gender or any of that. As a human being, you have a right to exist. And as a human being, you have a right to defend your existence. Physically, spiritually, all of the above. I think I want to go on the next topic. What's the next topic? You know what? I have a list of items that you have to believe in order to believe in the COVID. And the reason why I made the list is because I thought it was important for us to think about this rationally. I know that there are listeners on shortwave who might think, Dan, you're not a medical professional. And no, I'm not. I don't claim to be. I'm just a burnt out middle-aged software engineer. That's what I am. That is my professional credential vis-a-vis the COVID. But I want to go down a list of items that I think identify what are the logical and implausible scenarios surrounding the COVID. The first one is the restaurant. The Rheinhaus restaurant has raised booths, which means that once you sit down at the booth, your head is still absolutely at the same level as the head of some average waitress. But once you sit down, you can take off your mask. And once you stand up, you must put it on again. Does any of that make any sense at all? I mean, is there some weird airflow behavior in a restaurant that allows for that? None of that makes any sense. It's not rational. I'm not saying people should wear masks all the time at the restaurant. I think the mask doesn't do anything. I'm pretty certain it does nothing. But isn't it strange that while you walk around, you know, you have to have the mask on, but when you sit down at the table, you don't have to have it on? I don't see how that changes anything at all. I think you have people concentrated around each other still in the restaurant. So that doesn't change anything. I don't know. But I think it's implausible. How do people believe that? I have no idea. The next one is this whole wearing two masks thing. One mask is not healthy. Two masks is less healthy. I don't know how people don't understand that. It is confusing to me. The next one has to do with being out in the sunlight and in the wind. I have been out. You know, the weather is very dreary here right now. But every once in a while, you get a blue sky and you get wind. You get sun and you get wind. The sun contains ultraviolet light and the wind is, you know, the wind. But I'll see people in the last year on those days still wearing masks outside, and I'm thinking, do they believe the viruses have little propellers that allow them to, like, travel between the person they're walking to through the wind? You know, they'd have to have station-keeping abilities like blimps with big propellers so they can stay in the same spot in the wind. The wind viruses. The viruses with little propellers. But given that viruses don't really have metabolism, and they're not really quite alive, how does that work? Well, you don't need to know, Dan. It's called science. It's called science, and that's what they'll say. So that doesn't make any sense to me. I don't get it, but whatever. Moving on. So where I live currently, until I move today, which is, again, Good Friday, but you're listening, so it's Sunday. Ha ha ha, time helmet. Where I live has a very large, undocumented Chinese population. And the flights to SeaTac have never stopped, and I basically live within about a third of a mile to a half a mile of every major hospital in Seattle. And I could keep going. And yet I've seen no real indication of this thing they call the COVID. I've seen a cold, yes. Some people had a cold last winter. You know, I didn't have one this year, but last year I had a little bit of a cold. And I had the bad luck because I had the cold when the whole COVID thing as a psyop was being spun up. And they had these people on Twitter, I call them Twitter nurses, and they would say, oh, you're feeling sick, well, you better go to Harborview and go on a ventilator. If I'd gone on a ventilator, I think I'd be dead. That's the truth, I think. Closer to the truth. I can't prove it because it never happened, thankfully. But I think there's a good chance that would have killed me. So the fact that I've seen no evidence of it here, in transient housing, shared kitchens, the fact that I've seen no real good evidence of it here leads me to believe that it is a non-existent thing. But next topic, it killed the flu. So, it killed the flu. There were no flu deaths this year in Washington State during the flu season. At least that's what I think King 5 was reporting, you know. And that's in a previous show note, I think. So you can look that up, I believe. But there was no flu. It killed the flu. I don't know how that works. I really don't. They even admit in the article that it was like, you know, a 1-in-100-year thing, and they only started keeping track 100 years ago, so it could be more like a 1-in-10,000 or never thing, which means it really didn't happen. You know, it's funny. It seems like the science of statistics has gone backwards, because there was a day and age where you had statisticians who were really good at looking at data honestly and drawing rational conclusions based on the data. But what we're seeing with the COVID is monstrous in the context of statistical science. It's ridiculous. It is completely unjustified. It is as if you took the profession of being a lawyer and mathematics and you put them together. That's what we're seeing. I don't even want to think what that hybrid profession is, because it's monstrous. It's the application of pure sophistry. Yeah, so basically the COVID killed the flu, and I don't really know how that works. And if you're wondering, if you just tuned in on shortwave and you're listening to this crazy, crazy Irishman talking through the translational informational structure towards aliens that live beyond the moon, beyond Mars, beyond your imagination, it is the Planetary Status Report, and we are on WRMI out of Miami on 5950 kilohertz, and this is your friend Dan. And if you want to know about the notes for the show, you go to dfgtc.org/show notes. So yeah, they say it killed the flu. They say it killed the flu. I don't know what to say about that. I want to go in the next one. So it looks like, and I don't know if I should be mean, this one may be just normal in a way, but it's funny how the gorillas and the tigers and these other creatures got the COVID. I don't think it's that funny. I think what probably happened is that the PCR test that was created by, I think, Carrie Nullis. Anyways, the guy who invented the PCR test basically said you shouldn't use it the way it's being used to diagnose COVID. So it's probably not that surprising, given that people use that test to like test Coke cans and apples and all kinds of random stuff. And a lot of random stuff tested positive for COVID. And that's kind of weird, isn't it? Anyways, next topic. So I think you got to look at the vaccine narrative too. Think about what they're telling you with the vaccine. They're telling you that you're going to need more than one shot. They're telling you that even if you get the shot, you still can't do anything. They're basically telling you that the vaccine is whatever it is, it doesn't really help in any way. It might not even treat the, it might not even provide immunity to the virus as it currently exists. If you just look at the whole vaccine story that's being told right now, it's incomprehensible nonsense, really. And none of it makes any sense. There's like, oh, there's this one from this company and this one from that company, and they're all kind of okay, and I'm sure you can take any of them, and you make sure you take them every month now or something. None of that makes any sense. I'm sorry. I don't think that the thing, if it really did exist, merits this thing that's about to happen, which is forcing a medical procedure on billions of people. And it's a medical procedure of dubious background. It really is. I don't think we can totally trust this procedure. I'm sorry if you think I'm a crazy person for questioning whether or not we live in a world where governments would poison people. We, brothers and sisters, we live in a world where governments tested thousands of nuclear weapons above ground over a period of a couple decades and did poison huge swaths of the world. And that's just one example. So if you're asking me, do we live in a world where that would happen? The simple answer is yes, we do. This does happen. These things do happen. The other thing I think is funny is that, and other people have noticed this, but with respect to the vaccine versus the COVID, if the COVID, if someone dies and there's some way to plausibly link it to COVID, that is being done in hospitals almost instantaneously because there's a payoff. There's money involved, there's cash involved. Like any good grift, if you're running a con, you got to pay the stooges. And for all intents and purposes, the hospitals are the stooges at this point. They're getting money by, for participating in the grift. So it seems like if someone dies of whatever, including maybe even a car accident, within minutes we're told it's a COVID death. But if someone immediately dies as a result of taking the vaccine, we're told it's going to take months, it's going to take weeks, it's going to take maybe years to figure out what happened. It's going to take months or years or decades or centuries to figure out if it's a vaccine injury, but it takes milliseconds to determine right after the heart stops beating that it must have been the COVID. And I think that that's absurd. But again, you might differ. And I don't want to go through all of this because I want to go to the next topic. I do think it's absurd to believe that Bill Gates is a humanitarian. I know that that's what the spin doctors have him as, a great humanitarian. That is total bullshit. And yet that is the lie that he carries around himself. And it is amazing. It's inexplicable that so many people treat him this way. And it's part of the bizarreness of the COVID, because I would generally say, and I don't know how else to put it, I would have generally thought that people would have found him revolting. And yet, during this COVID, it's almost become like his cotillion, his coming out party, I don't want to tell you. It's like, you know, he's one of these debutantes. You know, debutantes. It's like he's the debutante and he's going to be officially known to the crowd. It seems like this is what it's been for him, and it's very strange. But what is stranger are the number of people in his thrall. What is stranger are all the people that look to him as a good guy. That's even weirder. And I apply that to Fauci as well. Like, even though technically in the notes I don't have him mentioned that way, I probably should. You know, people have kind of idolized these people. It is a cult of the personality now, because it's a cult. And you have these personalities. And it's kind of like, you know, in a way, it's as if instead of one Jim Jones, you had like 20 of them. And they kind of worked together, but they also kind of ran their own little mini show. But they were all basically Jim Jones, and you're basically living in Jonestown. Folks, you're living in Jonestown, okay? There are people who are going to take the vaccine because somebody told them to, not because it's a rational choice or even that we necessarily know what's in it, because it could be placebo. It could be inert. It could be harmless. It could be, I don't even know, and neither do you. But they don't have a right to do this to you. They don't have a right to do this to you. It is a medical procedure. And under the principles that were, you know, basically forged at Nuremberg after World War II, you have a right to reject the medical procedure. You have a right to say no. They don't have a right to tell you that you must do this. Anyways, I find it funny that Bill Gates is a kind of superhero in all this, and it's strange and it's bizarre and it's misleading and it is kind of demonic. And I, beyond that, brothers and sisters, you figure out the rest on your own. We're almost at the end of the hour, so I'll finish off the list. The last thing on my list was, you know, it's strange that people think that covering half your face is not damaging to society. I've had people I know tell me they don't think it's a big deal. Like, it's no big deal covering half your face. It does nothing. And I think I know why. People have been staring at their smart devices for so long, in a way, they've already been covering their face. They've already been wearing a mask. The mask is how they're connected with a smart device and not connected with the world. So, in a weird way, the mask doesn't make a difference because these people were already disconnected from each other before the COVID dystopia, before the masktopia crapola, before all of this complete madness. They were already disconnected from their brothers and sisters. And it's a scary thought because I think you have to come to the admission that this is not all random. This is probably not all random. This is probably not just some big accidental thingy. There is probably more going on here, and it's hard to admit. It's hard to talk about. I don't know. It's one of those situations where people, if you're unable to escape this despair, you will drown. You will drown. You will not survive. If you're unable to rebuke the pure darkness, you will not survive. And it's so difficult because you wake up every day and in your head you say to yourself, this world has become monstrous. This world has become so very dark that it's impossible to grasp. And I will say with respect to Seattle, you know, I will miss Seattle. I will be sad to go. I will regret some of the things I've said and some of the things I've done. But I gotta say, there are a lot of things I'm leaving behind that I think it's good for my welfare that I do. And there is a kind of strange darkness that has infested this place. And a lot of people don't see it because they're staring at their phones. For the same reason, the mask doesn't seem like a big deal. But I will tell you, I think it's traumatizing people. I think it's traumatizing children. And actually, if you care about dogs, I would venture to guess dogs aren't doing so good with it. Just a theory. If you're a dog person, I'd do a study. But the fact is, it's bad. But what do we do, brothers and sisters? Because even though it might be Friday, Good Friday, on this day, our Lord struggled against darkness. Our Lord was beaten on this day. Our Lord was treated terribly on this day. Our Lord was put to death. Today is Good Friday. On this day, our Lord Jesus Christ gave himself to us, and it's something worth remembering and at least mentioning before we close out this broadcast. But technically speaking, if you're listening to it on Sunday, on this day our Lord rose. If you're listening on Sunday, on this day our Lord proved the world. If you're listening on Sunday, along with the sacrifice. So I will leave you with your own thoughts on Christianity and Jesus Christ. I will leave you with your own sins. I have many myself. I have the sin of scrumtrosity and drimbrosity. I'm guilty of time slackitude. I'm also guilty of the great beer crimes of the Trinket Cribes. I have wandered with the Gringas Beasts. I have thought the slavish women of Sector 4 were beautiful. I have been a danger to myself in Sector 4 and Sector 5. But I am still alive, brothers and sisters, and so are you if you're listening on Sunday night, and it's almost midnight Eastern Standard Time, and it's Good Friday for me, and it's very early in the morning, just barely 3 a.m. now, and it's weird how time is like that when you record a broadcast. But if you're listening on Sunday night, you know, God bless you. God bless the day. God bless, you know, thank you, Jesus Christ. Thank you for what you've done for us. If we have one chance in all of this strange lottery of existence for all the choices we have, through Jesus, I think we are saved. And I know there are people out there. If you're an atheist, I am happy you listen, okay? And also, happy Easter.